You're listening to Wake Up Tucson. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
All righty, we're back. Wake Up Tucson. It's Sean McCluskey and Shelley Kice sitting in for the vacationing Chris DeSimone. If you want to get on the conversation, give us a call, 520-790-2040. We have one of my food favorites on air, on the line, and unfortunately he could not be in studio today, and it's Michael Elefante of Mama Luisa's. Michael, how you doing, brother?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, but I have a very upset co-host because you're not in studio, and she was dying for some tiramisu, and now I've said it again for the third time. And by the way, I had some yesterday, and it was amazing. I mean, simply the best. I got the last order you had. So I was there about 2:30 in the afternoon, so I don't know if the night shift made more, but it was really, really good. I also got the I got your fresh shells that were dried. I'm telling you what, I made a meat sauce last night with a little extra garlic and then put those together. It is sinful. So if you want good dried pasta, go see Michael Elefante over at Mama Luisa's.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, Michael. All I've heard about, thank you, fine, doing fine, except I've been hearing about tiramisu all morning, and I understand it's the best, and I can't wait to come and try it. You know, I said earlier, with all this staying at home, my husband was beginning to think I could cook. So we can absolutely not close these restaurants because I don't want him to be confused. And I want to get out there to Mama Luisa's and taste this tiramisu that Sean did not bring
me. I didn't. I should have.
It's not a traditional tiramisu in any sense. We don't bake it. We don't cook it. We make kind of like a trefoil mousse. With it, with like a cowboy coffee, espresso, and we whip it in with the egg yolks and the mascarpone, and then we layer that with the lady fingers that we soak in Kahlua and in the more of that cowboy coffee.
And you didn't bring any.
I ate it.
Thank you very much, guys.
I'm going to make some and bring it. I think they made some last night, so it's got to set up overnight. So, you know, if it's ready when I get there, I'll run some down there. You guys are still there.
It is amazing. It's not traditional, but all the traditional flavors are there, and it's divine. And then try his cannolis. You're going to leave there about 15 pounds heavy, and you'll have that's the to go beside. So you'll be full, and you'll take away, and you'll take it to go.
Yeah.
And if you go up there for lunch, go for lunch because he's got some amazing sandwiches too. Now I was in the restaurant yesterday, and Michael has this whole Corona crud, as I'm going to call it. I was going to use a different word, but I'll use crud. He's got the 6-foot separation. The tables, he took out, it looks like he took out half your tables and put them in the bar and opened up the back room and took out the buffet table that used to, or the buffet bar that was there, made more room in the restaurant, redid where the water leak was. I love that new ceiling up there. That's awesome. And the table spacing is perfect. How are you guys doing at night, Michael?
We're doing okay. I mean, you know, we're down to about 40% of our normal tables. We put everything, all of our tables into the bar so people could cut. One, it's a dual purpose thing. So, you know, people can see it when they come in, kind of see what it does to the restaurant industry, what this is doing. It kind of, you know, it's just like a little display of what's going on, and it lets people know, you know, what really, you know, how this is affecting us. We're running about 14 tables now out of, I think we have normally about 35. To-go business has been great, and our regulars have been coming back and supporting us. We're doing okay. You know, we're staying strong. It could be a lot worse. We're blessed that we have 64 years of restaurant heritage behind us that is helping us for sure.
Now, what are your thoughts on Steve Kozacek's voice saying that the city council member Kozacek wants to close restaurants again? What are your thoughts there?
I think it'll be disastrous for us. And I know it's an unpopular opinion with some people that, you know, we got to keep the health and safety. But, you know, a lot of it is, I mean, you can come into a restaurant and we're going to, at any given time, unless you're there on like a Friday or Saturday night at 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock, there's maybe 10 people in the restaurant. You're going to be exposed to way more people going to the grocery store, going to these big box, you know, stores, you know, the home improvement stores, anything, pretty much anywhere else you go, you're going to be exposed to way more people that aren't doing as many things. Those places can't keep up with the cleaning as properly as, like, you know, as we do, where, you know, people come in, we've got the proper hand sanitizers, we've got proper, you know, table cleaning procedures that we use that are per the CDC from Ecolab. All of our people are wearing masks. We're doing proper hand washing. We're not wearing gloves because the gloves are, you know, help spread that. We, after people touch things, they go in, they wash their hands, you know, as per the Pima County Health Department and what they want us to do. We're following those guidelines to a T because we want people to know that, you know, restaurants are safe. We want people to know that, you know, there's you can still go out and enjoy yourself and not have to worry. And our tables are actually even spaced more than 6 feet apart. We space them 6 feet apart from chair to chair instead of like the center of a table to the other center of a table. So you're actually looking about 7.5 feet from one end of a table to the start of another table, just because we wanted to make sure your back is 6 feet from the other person's back at a different table.
So like I said, Michael's doing it right, and that's the best thing about it is you guys have been doing it for 64 years, like you said, and you have that following and that backing that's going to help you survive. But you know a bunch of guys in the restaurant industry like I do, and not all of them are going to make it out of this. How do we help those guys?
The main thing is just go out and support them, you know, and it doesn't have to be big. You know, just, you know, if you're going out for lunch and you're like, hey, you know, I could go for a sandwich. There's plenty of local sandwich shops instead of going to, you know, the chains or anything like that. You know, go to the guys who are invested in this economy and are trying to help keep things floating. One of the best places to go right now that I really enjoy going is Fire and Smoke with Lindy. He's got great pizzas. They got great burgers. I mean, you got Lindy making burgers. I mean, that's the greatest thing in the entire world. You know, go out to Charo Vita. You know, go up to the parish.
Absolutely.
You know, all of these places, you know, we got a nice tight-knit group of chefs that are all doing big things and trying to help and trying to be, you know, a little beacon of hope in these, you know, days. And that's what it's about is, you know, if you are going to go out and eat, just be conscious about it and know where you're going to go. Don't just, you know, go to these chains where, you know, the majority said, I think it's like 70% of the money that goes into there goes straight back up to Phoenix or out to their corporate stores. You know, if you're on the east side, Swirl Corners, Mulligan's, my buddy,
happy, Matt Krause, happy birthday, mm-hmm. Mike, to CJ Hammond.
Yeah. Happy birthday, absolutely. CJ.
The one and only Paisan, that guy.
Yeah.
but you know, they just brought on Matt who, used to be at Hermanos and, I mean, he does this whole fermentation thing, really stepping up the game over at Mulligan's. I mean, there's so many places now that there's just great chefs doing great things and trying to support local. You know, and part of the thing is with us is it's not just supporting local from us, because what we're doing is we're supporting the local farmers and the local markets and all of those things. So buying from us allows us to purchase more from these other local people, these local farmers, these, you know, local livestock, you know, all those things to be able to, you know, to keep the whole cycle going here.
I've got to say, Mike, this is Ed. I've been out to eat twice this week. Wednesday night, we went to Hacienda del Sol, ate on the patio because the main dining room is not open. But there's plenty of spacing. It's every other table. Everywhere you go. Last night, the guys went to Putney's. Okay, had a burger and a beer. And it's every other table and da-da-da. Everybody knows. And in the restaurant business, are doing the right thing. They really are. You guys are really trying. Mm-hmm. And for people to go and go, you're not going to a rock concert. You're not even going to a movie. You're going to a restaurant with 40 people in it, okay? Stop being so damn scared. Nobody's going to get near you. You wear a mask in, you sit down, and you can't eat with a mask, so you take your mask off. And when you get up, you take your mask and you leave, okay? And that's it. Nobody's hurting anybody. You got to go out and live your life a little bit and enjoy. This is Tucson. It's summertime. What the hell? When does it get any better? Come on.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Just do it, people. Stop being so damn afraid.
All right, Michael, I got one question for you before I let you go because we've got to go up. We've got to break.
Yeah.
What is your favorite thing on your menu?
It's got to be the gnocchi right now. I mean, if you ask around from Rocco to ask Matt Cable, it's his like favorite thing. He's at the restaurant, you know, twice a week dropping off cakes because we get cakes from his catering company. First, we eat with Gina Skelton. She's making some amazing cakes for us. He's picking up a gnocchi dish. Devin Sanders had it. I mean, there's some big guys in town who are loving it, and they're coming to get it. And you know, they're coming back, you know, 2 to 3 times a week for it. We make a collaborating chili bacon jam with it, with agave that we get locally. It's got the gnocchis. After we poach them, we give them a quick little deep fry to make them just crispy and flaky on the outside. Toss them with the shaved Brussels and the mushrooms and a little house-made ricotta right on top and a little hazelnut brittle, and it's absolutely divine.
And that's why you go to Mama Luisa's, because he just described the perfect dish. Michael Elefante, thank you so much, brother. I really do appreciate you. Mama Luisa's, it's on the east side, right there, right about, what is it, 30th and Craycroft?
Yeah, the 29th and Craycroft are about a quarter mile north of Davis-Monthan Air Force Base on the east side of the street.
You can't miss it. Give them a try. You're not going to be disappointed. Everything on the menu is amazing. Thanks again, Michael. Really do appreciate you.
See you soon, Michael.
Stay safe. Absolutely. I'll be waiting. Stay safe.
Wake up, Tucson. It's Sean McCluskey, Shelley Kai, sitting in with Ed Alexander. Give us a call, 790-2040. We'll be right back after this.
It's the Sean McCluskey.
Yeehaw.
That's his theme song on his show.
Talk of the town, bringing back nightmares. I got a little cold chill sweats going on right now, and heart race is... It's a good time, though.
So still staying home and watching a lot of TV these days, right?
Who, me?
No, I am, because still too darn hot after, you know, for a while. But there's a two-part Garth Brooks special now on Netflix or something like that.
Yes.
It's 4-hour special. I watched the first 2 hours this week. It's really good.
A lot of documentaries that I would normally not would have seen.
Right.
And watched, and like a lot of 30 for 30s and that sort of thing. Sports
I love documentaries.
Related. Yeah. The one about Herb Brooks, we talked about it with Mark Van Buren on Wednesday.
Yeah?
Miracle. And I got home Wednesday night, and it's 30 for 30 with Herb Brooks. And I was like, oh, I got to watch this. So it's just what we do. So it's Shelley Kice and Sean McCluskey sitting in for Christy Simone. We've got a lot going on. Our next guest is going to be Dustin Williams, superintendent of schools. He's going to be a great conversation because we were just talking about off air. My little one's getting to go to Lehman Academy next year, which is great. And
really? Okay.
The difference between Lehman and a normal school, or the public school, I should say, is public schools teaching Common Core. Lehman gives the Common Core aspect to satisfy the requirement, but teaches classical. And the kid responds to the classical side. Because, of course, I got the homeschooler for a little bit when we went out of school and then they stopped doing school. Teacher says, do Common Core. They break it down into blocks and you're supposed to count numbers. I don't know how to do it. I was not taught that way. So I taught her what I knew. I said, look, this is easy. Said, you're over here counting blocks and numbers, and you got 6 different things going on over here. Let's do it the way we're supposed to. And 2 + 2 is what? She goes, it's 4. Okay. 3 + 3 is what? It's 6. I said, what's the number? She goes, it's 64. I'm like, oh, hey, we didn't count blocks. She's like, this is much easier. 8 years old.
Hello.
Now she's 9. I'm like, come on. The kids all learn differently. And some kids Common Core might be great for. But I don't think that mine is, she's not mine, but she will be mine, and she's mine now. So she's not good at that. She's good at, hey, this is how you do it. Give it to her and have her directly go through it. Shelley and I were talking about off air, will schools open? That's going to be the greatest question for Dustin. What's it going to look like? Our restaurants look crazy as hell right now. What's our school going to look like? Are you going to put partitions up in front of the kids? How much is that going to cost? Where are you getting the money?
We're going to have to talk to Dustin about it.
I know. It's going to be a great question. And the thing that I like about Lehman, they're going to do every precaution that they can. They're going to have spacing in that. They might not change the classrooms. They might change the teachers and that sort of thing, so you might not get the kids passing in the hallway. But they're not going to put up barriers. They're not going to do those things. They're going to do the minimum that's required to keep the kids safe so that the kids can learn in a normal learning environment.
So I've talked with a lot of parents who are going to keep their kids at home because they do not want to put them into a situation where the kids are fearful that they have to wear a mask, that they have to socially distance, that they can't go outside, that they can't do this. They don't want to put them into a situation where the kids grow up in this little paranoia environment.
They don't want to create that, but yet they're going to keep them home. what do they think they're going to create when they keep them at the house? They're going to instill that paranoia because now I can't go out. If you have a mask on and you go out in public, the kid's going to go, the mask is stupid. It doesn't protect me. I sneezed in my hand. I felt it come through my mask. You really think it works?
Well, and they the parents that I've talked to, their kids aren't wearing masks. Their kids are going outside. They are playing. They're climbing trees. They're riding bikes. They're interacting with other folks. The key here is they are concerned that there's going to be almost this paranoia that you feel if you walk off or when you go to get on a school bus, they take your temperature. You have to have a mask. You have to sit by yourself on a seat. You get to school. You do... There, you know, that's a lot of stuff for a little kid.
And that's where the parent comes in and says everything's going to be fine.
Yep.
No, and you reassure the child. It is. It gets to you. It just, and when you're a little kid, it's hard. You'll remember that. Remember we had the fire raids. The fire
jumping underneath your desk for the tornado grills and all that fun stuff.
You don't forget that. It gets ingrained in you. So maybe it's a good thing to be ingrained that you wash your hands and you should be, you know, aware of other people, but where do you draw the line? Where's the middle here?
Yeah, I grew up in Panama during the riots, and we had to lay down on the seats of the bus.
See, are things you never forget.
You don't forget that kind of stuff.
And you want to traumatize the kid by forcing them to go through all this and put a partition up at their desk and have them have no interaction with their friends that 8 months ago. They'd walk in the classroom. Hey, there's Sally seeing Susie. And they give each other a big old hug. And then they hold hands, skip down the hallway, have a good time, chew each other's bubble gum, and drink out of the same fountain and everything else. I mean, kids are going to be kids. We ate dirt as kids, for Christ's sake.
Sean, we turned the fountains off. We've turned the water fountains off.
Well, no, now you have the dispensers for the stupid thing.
Right.
Yeah, for your water bottle.
But have we installed those in schools yet? How much is that going to cost?
They're changing. Well, I know Lehman Academy is changing their drinking fountain because they had the traditional drinking fountain to where it spit out.
Yeah.
But again, I mean, as kids, we drank from hoses. We rode our bikes with no helmets. We sat in cars that mom and dad smoked Pall Malls or unfiltered with no seatbelts. I mean, for Christ's sake. Nobody cares.
Oh, Sean, you're starting to sound like back in the day.
And we're going to have this will be a great conversation with Dustin when he comes in about 5 minutes. I had a call last week or so by a guy. He says, I've been a custodian for Tucson District 1 forever. He says, it's all bull. He says, if somebody calls in sick, that room doesn't get cleaned. Nobody covers that guy's job. Okay, he says it's a charade. They are really not doing anything in District 1 to really care about that stuff.
That's TUSD for you.
They
no
just
education,
can't
no cleanliness.
You know what I mean?
Wake up, Tucson. Sean McCluskey, Shelley Kice. Anyhow, wake up, Tucson. Sean McCluskey, Shelley Kice, sitting in for Christy Simone. If you want to get on the conversation, give us a quick call, 790-2040. We have Superintendent of Schools Dustin Williams online. Brother, how you doing, Dustin? Good to hear from you.
Good to see you. Good to hear you, Sean. Shelley, how are you?
Excellent. Thank you for the excellent customer service. Yesterday, I turned in my signatures to be a candidate for the Continental School Board, and your office was efficient, effective. I was in and out, pleasant and charming. Thank you very much.
Man, I couldn't ask for a better sound bit than that. That was really kudos to Jeanette Velasquez, my personal assistant. She runs that whole department during this 30-day stretch for all of the amazing board members putting in the time and effort for our kids and our schools, an unpaid job, and it's incredible what you guys all do. So to see you there, I saw that picture. It was really awesome. Thank you so much for that, but really thank you for what you all do for the service for our schools and kids.
Dustin, speaking about schools and kids, what's it going to look like? We got 30 days till open, right? About 45 days or so. I mean, it's going to be here before we know it. How do you prepare for this and how do you pay for it?
Yeah, it's a really good question, Sean. I'm glad you guys are talking about it because there's a lot of parents that are really waiting for some answers, and we have schools that start around the 20th of July. Matter of fact, Vail is somewhere around that time, either the 17th or the 22nd, somewhere in there. They're looking at maybe an extension to August 10th. We've got Chandler and a bunch of schools up in Maricopa getting ready to go. And we got a really high-risk problem right now. If this was a couple months ago when we were running in the lower numbers of COVID, a lot of the health experts were okay, and, you know, the governor's idea of opening was okay. It was always a risk no matter what, sending kids and staff back. But now that these numbers have creeped up to where they are, everything is kind of pulled back, and we've kind of got back into what the governor said yesterday is this pause zone. And so he brought us an executive order that we're happy he did that. There's some good flexibility, and there's going to be some money in there to do this. But there's a clause in there we're a little concerned about, which is one of the statements is that it's mandatory to have an option for 5-day-a-week in-person learning. And at this given second, like where we are today with the numbers, the health experts that we're talking to just say that that's just not going to be possible at this moment. We'd really like to see just maybe another remote option for just maybe, and these are just hypothetical still, and obviously the school districts can make their own decisions and they have all that authority. But when we left, we went into a remote option. You know, was it perfect? No, it wasn't perfect. But did we have school running, and were kids getting educated to the best of the ability that we can do that remotely? Yeah, the schools were incredible. It's just amazing what they do on a flip of a dime. They can just put this whole graduation together remotely in 30 days. They can put the remote learning together. So it can be done, but we really have to look at it as a community now and say to ourselves, you know, you got about 140, 150 approximately kids running around from K-12, and then you got about another 23,000, 24,000 staff and teachers and parapros, librarians, custodians. So those are huge numbers, and we haven't seen that influx of people running around working because they've all been in what we're still in, which is called phase one. To be released to actually go back to school, the governor has to release us into what's called phase two. So he's having a very difficult time doing that because he's kind of seeing where those numbers, and rightfully so, yesterday was a pretty sobering press conference that he had. And, you know, like he said, everybody, if you don't have to leave, don't leave. You know, obviously, if you got to go to work and you got to do your stuff, wear your mask. And at this point right now, it's we got to do everything we can to get this thing settled somewhat within 30 days or by the latest early August to ensure that we're going to be able to make sure our, you know, kids are safe and also all the staff.
Dustin, let me ask you this. You said a couple of things that I want to tackle here right quick. You said right now it's not practical to have 5 days in-class sessions. However, I've been working through this entire time, through the entire COVID, because I'm one of the essential industries. And Lowe's and Home Depot and Costco have hundreds and hundreds of people every single day rolling in and out of there. You've got an environment in your school where you could take the kids, same like a Lowe's. There's no difference in a Lowe's or elementary school, in my view. You put the 30 kids in the classroom, and you rotate the teachers, minimizing the risk because those kids stay with those 30 kids. Kind of like what they're going to do in the NBA bubble. Those kids are going to stay together all day long in that room, maybe even eat lunch in the classroom. I don't know if that's possible. But I do know that education is suffering when you take the kids and you do the remote learning. Yes, you guys adapted very well, but it wasn't as good a learning experience for the children. And I taught my 8-year-old, now 9-year-old, her math lessons. And we got through it rather quickly. But it wasn't the same as going to school, interacting with your kid, and having that experience that we had as kids. How do we get back to normal, and how do you guys prepare for that? I mean, with your statement that says we are not ready to open to 5 days, that's a little disturbing, and that would make news because you'd be the first one to say that.
Yeah, and obviously, you know, elected officials, sometimes we have to say things that people don't want to hear. And Sean, I'm with you. I got an 8-year-old and a 6-year-old. And believe me, my wife and I look at this scenario every day and we're like, how do we get our kids back in the classroom? Like that.
Yes,
everybody
sir.
Everybody wants that. And we know the number one thing with education. We all understand the cognitive part that kids got to learn. But the real beauty of school is the social emotional. That's the key, and that's what you really, really miss when you're remote learning.
Yes.
Like we have zero, I don't know how the kids are doing, so one of the things that keeps me up at night is, let's talk about, you know, child abuse. What's going on out there with the kids? At least I have an eye on 99% of those kids that are in that school, and I can look for the social-emotional well-being of those students. If I can't see those students as educators, that's concerning. So when we look at schools, we think about that practicality, and we think about how do you open. And then here's what happens, Sean, and this is the fine line that everybody really has to work together with. And obviously safety first and the well-being of the kids is paramount in the well-being of the staff. But, you know, Lowe's and these other businesses, they can do social distancing pretty well. When we start talking about these overcrowded classrooms and the size of these classrooms, and then we put the element of kids, like, you know, kids and adults don't think the same. The adolescent brain, like the mask wearing and the social distancing, the reality of that at the end of the day, that is not going to be able to happen. I mean, we can try to the best of our ability and say, wear your mask. But I know kids. And let me just tell you, that honeymoon phase wears off real quick. Now, the spreading part and the statistics do show us, yes, kids are okay. It's really about 25% of that 25,000 that we're really concerned about of the staff. And then we're also really concerned that if the kids start contracting the COVID at the school and going home and spreading it, because this thing is just a monster spreader, right? Like how contagious it is incredible. So when they go home, we don't know what's going on. And so we lose all these different contact tracing abilities, and schools just don't have that. Like if there's a breakout in one school, finding out where that happened and who had it is going to be really, really difficult, because schools just don't have 13, 14 people dedicated to, you know, doing contact tracing and following this whole thing. Now, there, you know, obviously there could be some CARES funds and we can work on that. The hybrid model part, that could be an option. It really could. Now, again, I'm just talking about where we are at this very given moment.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and that's what we have to be ready for. So in March of this year, we had to shut down completely. There was no question. The governor said schools are closed. That's a very, very stark reality. We have to be ready to turn on that. So do we necessarily have to start remote learning? If you ask me my personal opinion at this very given day, I would say it would probably be a good idea.
Okay. We're speaking with Dustin Williams, Superintendent of Schools. I like that. Let's do this. Dustin, we're going to take a quick break. It's 7:46 in the morning. We're going to bring you back because we've got more questions. So, again, yeah, Dustin Williams, absolutely. Superintendent of Schools, doing a great job of what he's got with him. Wake Up Tucson, Sean McCluskey, Shelley Kice. We'll be right back after this. Alrighty, we're back. It's Sean McCluskey, Wake Up Tucson. We've got Superintendent of Public Instruction, Dustin Williams, on. Dustin, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
So before
we
left, we were talking about what it's going to look like when school starts. And the governor came out yesterday, and the governor said that we need 5-day instruction in class. And you said we have to get to phase two before we do that, but we've got rising COVID cases across the state. And in your honest opinion, on July 20th, when the first school starts, are you thinking right now they'll be in class?
At this given moment right now, you know, so with the executive order, there's some options. And the option is remote learning, in class, or sort of a hybrid of both. The hybrid is really hard strategically to do. But also, there's a provision in there that says in the executive order that schools must have a remote option in person at the school. So that little provision makes it really hard to where schools could say, hey, yeah, I want to open on the 20th, and here's what we want to do. We want to really limit the school size. So let's say I'm going to give you, approximate numbers. Don't hold me on this. But let's say the school said I wanted to go 60% remote learning. We'll bring 40% of the school back for maybe the first quarter or the first semester. And that way we're getting some in person, and then they could switch or flip maybe halfway through the year or something. And you could really control the class sizes, like you said, Sean, bringing them in, not necessarily 30 in a classroom, because with the CDC guidelines and everything of 6 feet apart, no more than 10 in a room, like all those factors are what makes it really, really challenging to open with all the kids. So will you see all the kids this month in July? Absolutely not. Will you see a big blend of some remote learning and some kids there? I think that's what you're going to see. But the reality is, with that little clause, what it makes it hard for schools to start planning and say, what do I do when I get the parents that say, hey, that clause says I can go to school, and it says 5 days a week. So guess what? I'm going to school. So then schools are going to have to say, okay, that's what the governor's executive order says, so I have to take in those kids. So then that percentage changes. So you're no longer remote learning 60%, 40% in class. Now that thing jumps and flips around, and you've got 70% of the kids coming, and you've got 30% remote learning, or let's say it even goes higher, 80%. Every percentage you go higher with kids in the classrooms is every percentage that we will not be able to social distance, and we will not be able to really monitor the COVID in the CDC and the Arizona Department of Health and Pima County, all their guideline ways that they want us to do. And that's where the conundrum really is. What's happening is the schools are getting all of this guidance, but nobody is coming out to the public that has the health authority and saying, hey, parents, understand that if the numbers get high and the percentage of kids going to school, there is a major risk that your son or your daughter or the staff member, they will get COVID. And we know what the results are, COVID. And unfortunately, you know, 5% at least of the people that get this disease or this virus, this nasty thing, It doesn't look good, and in some cases they perish.
The death rate's less than 1% right now. However, people spend a lot of time on ventilators. They may or may not make it. They've got underlying conditions. There's a whole science to it. But let's stay on task and let's look at schools. What are parents supposed to do right now? I mean, we're June 20th, June 26th. We got July coming up. July 4th is typically when all the parents start to get their school supplies together. They get their clothes and everything else. You got a week. What are people to do? I mean, do they plan to go to school, plan not to go to school? I mean, how do you get your life together if you're a parent right now?
I say what you do is you kind of make the decision between you and your family, and you say to yourself, number one, watch the numbers, see what's going on, watch the direction of the governor and the health department. Aside from that, you say to the school, well, you know, let's really look at two plans. Let's be fair to the school and let them plan accordingly. Let them plan either remote learning, if that's what you choose, or in class. And so they can start developing those numbers. If they have to do remote learning in class, and then this little hybrid of people just electing to come to where the student just has to be on site, that's going to start making it really, really hard. But if the parent says, hey, you know what, I'm okay for the first semester of remote learning, is that an option? That might be something they want to do. And we want them to stay with their school. That is something that is very important. There's a lot of discussion about the exodus of schools and going homeschool. And homeschool is really good for just a certain amount of parents. We've got about 3,600 of them right now in homeschool, and it's a really unique thing. At least when you're with the school, and that's kind of how you were going to school, you still have those support mechanisms remotely. That would be my opinion for a parent right now, is to look at.
Okay.
So, Dustin, I have a question. How do we release the liability of the schools?
That's the million-dollar question. And again, here is the big issue that we have is, we have all the guidance in the world, and then we have the reality of life. And again, safety paramount, but then we look at let's talk lawyers and talk real world business stuff happens. And schools are left in that middle on their own island, and no one has come up and said, hey, during this pandemic, we can't point the finger and put all of this on the backs of schools. That's just not fair. So let's say worst case scenario, and we don't want to talk about this, but this really changes, Sean and Shelley. When adults die, it's really hard. It's really hard. When a child dies, it's a game changer. Like, that's where everything stops. And to say that a school, you know, caused that, and then to put the school through the litigation and everything of that, that's really not fair, especially when everyone is saying, hey, school's got to open. You got to bring everyone back. And schools are like, okay, we're going to do the best that we can. So schools are going to have to either have a liability clause or a waiver. And, you know, waivers sometimes don't work also, because if you miss one waiver, I mean, I think there just needs to be an under, again, at this point where we're going in the next 30 days, politics aside from everybody, we need to look and say, how can I support our school? And the most important thing you can do is you can say, we're going to do everything we possibly can. If we can do some remote learning with the school for a little bit, we will. If we can't, we have to go to work and keep the economy going, and my child has to go to school, or that's what I want with my child. That's your choice, and we're not going to argue that. We believe in that type of scenario too. But there's going to be a lot of new things. Like, number one, a checklist before kids come to school, like temperatures, how's the student doing, where have you been, have you been around, you know, people that have traveled out of country, and all these little things. Parents have to be that new team member, first line of defense. The days of going to school with sniffles and colds,
over.
We're going to say, hey, yeah, thank you. You heard it from Sean first, okay? Put that in writing.
Yeah, we'll put that down. One. But you know what, Dustin, I think, you know, you and I met one time up in Phoenix at the State House, and I think we need the State House to intervene here. We need legislation that will prevent parents and families from holding schools liable. And so as we move forward and we look at opening schools, school board members are really in a conundrum, just along with you, and we all want to work together. So everything that you've said so far, we need for our parents to understand that we are all in this together. We need to get back to school. Our businesses need our families, our moms and dads back in the workplace. We need to get the economy going, and we need to do this as safely as possible. So we've got quite a situation, and Dustin, you've been awesome this morning.
Yeah,
Thank you, Dustin,
for calling in. Dustin Williams,
absolutely.
Public Instruction, Superintendent of Public Instruction. I've got one last quick question, yes or no. Temperature scans on the way in the building.
The reality is it's a line of defense. If the schools can do it, yes. And if they can't, no. If you miss one kid, you know, any line of defense that you can do, Sean, any line of defense, but it just gets really hard.
Thanks, Dustin. Appreciate
awesome.
It. Wake up, Tucson.
Dustin.
We'll be right back.